is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Pickens a la derecha. Y ahí va Kenny Pickett a pasar el pase por el centro, atrapado por Jorgito. Pickens, Pickens a Pickens, Pickens a Pickens, Pickens a Pickens.
Tremendo trabajo del novato a novato. Sí, señor, la recepción que le da la vuelta al partido. Ahí está. Querías una segunda versión de una recepción inmaculada. Le están dando la vuelta con 46 segundos por jugar. Una vez más, 50 años más tarde, se le vuelven a aplicar a los Raiders.
Oh, Alvaro, you guys were smoking that night. You guys were hot in that booth, brother.
Good morning. I was telling Wes that we were shirtless like the Raiders before the game.
We got to step our game up, Wolf, I tell you.
We do. Now, there's some people that shouldn't be shirtless. I'm one of them, okay?
I'm already there, for sure.
Wow. But, man, oh, man, that was – you captured the emotion of the moment. Love it. Tell me about what it was like doing it, because here's the thing about it. You nail it, you and Billy, I got to shut up. You know, I got to like hold it. You got to hold your mouth and keep it zipped. Just shut the yapper for a moment so that the play-by-play guy can get it done. And you got it done as Billy gets it done.
Well, you know, we got that call out quickly. As you know, when you're in the booth, when they score a touchdown, the first thing you do is you look for yellow.
Yes.
If there's any flag. But I didn't see any yellow, so I let it rip. But I have to say, that was the best pass of the season for Kenny Pickett.
Wow.
The anticipation, the precision, the decisiveness, the timing of it. You know, I've always said that sometimes his passes come off just a little, like a fraction of a second late. Fine, you can still get the ball. But this one was on the money, leading the receiver. It was a tight window. The window wasn't closing on the left, but it was closing on the right. The defender was right there. And I thought it was the best pass of the season four. I mean, he threw a pass to Freiermuth that was pretty good, a tight window.
Mm-hmm.
But considering the situation, to me, and the anticipation and his decisiveness, the best pass of the season. So it's a good thing to see it in week 16 for sure.
Alvaro, you gotta love. I mean, hey, listen. We know it wasn't a Mona Lisa for the offense on Saturday night, but to be able to, despite all that, when the game was really on the line, final drive to put together their only complete drive of the game to go win it like that, to snatch the lead late with all the weather elements, with all the emotion of the buildup and the halftime ceremony for Franco. I gotta hope that's something that can galvanize this team and this offense going forward, another step in their growth and development, and hopefully a little confidence, a little galvanizing here before you head to a hostile environment this weekend in Baltimore.
Wes, you have to do it to believe you can do it.
Right.
But you have to do it once, and you build upon it. Do you remember coming out of the bye? I think it was New Orleans or Tampa, and they finally got the running game going.
Yep, New Orleans.
And it was just decisive. And my comment then was, whether they can replicate this or not, just having done it means that they know it's within them to do it again.
Yes.
Then when you do it again, it's when the confidence takes you into a whole different level. Like, oh, wait a minute. We're born to do this, or we really have a knack to do this. But getting it done the first time gives you that initial confidence that even if it doesn't work the second and third time, you know it's going to happen again because it already happened once. And under those conditions, I should add, there was a lot of weight. They talk about weighty plays.
Yeah.
Coach Tomlin talks about weighty plays. There was a lot of weight in that stadium. I mean, Craig and Wes, you could feel that. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
Wes wasn't because he's wearing the elf hat and the Christmas attire. There was a lot of weight in that stadium at that point. And again, Najee Harris. You know, unsung hero in that drive, but boy, did he bail him out. Freiermuth, did he bail him out. The line, everybody, really. And then Pickens crowning it, you know, rookie to rookie at the end. That was just amazing to watch.
It really was. And what I love about that last drive, what I listened to some guy, and I should just stop listening or reading. I can't even remember whether I listened to reading, come to think of it now. Especially with, the whole thing with Franco just got my week just begoggled because, we've spent so much time in mourning the loss of our great friend and great teammate and brother, Franco Harris. And it's kind of like made things kind of jambalaya in the brain here. But the fact of the matter is, one of the things I loved what Kenny did on that 10-play, 76-yard, 209 drive at the end of the game to win it was that he kept checking it down. And some people go, he kept checking it down. But that's what they're giving him. To have under this enormous pressure of this game 50 years in the making, and you got that last drive, you got to make it count. And you got to make sure that your game management and clock management skills are like right spot on because you don't have a time to make mistakes. He kept checking it down. Najee, get the job done. Check it down. Najee, you go to Freiermuth. You go, and all of a sudden, bingo, there's the money play right there with Pickens. I think that so well says that Kenny Pickett is growing in his game skills. Just the fact that he was able to, yes, you check it down because you don't push the ball down when the defense is daring you to push the ball down because they're sitting back there waiting on a big pick, So I think that's a marker that I think for Kenny is job one, is being able to withstand the pressure, the enormous pressure to come up with a big play and to wait until you're in striking range and then you drop the hammer on him.
Doing that at 21 below.
Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah. I'm going to rush right now to the U.S. trademark office and just trademark Kenny Cool with double K's. Kenny Cool, that's who he is. Now, you ask him, he'll tell you that somehow he'll say, well, I've done that before. But you're absolutely right. I actually felt in the last possession when they opted to kick, I thought, oh, maybe they need to go for it. Maybe there's not a lot of time. Thinking, just like you, that maybe asking Pickett to have a 2-minute offense with a 2-minute warning and two timeouts. So you still had, that in your pocket. Maybe sort of cutting it close. Maybe he's not up for it. And the thought did cross my mind for sure. And then to see that patience, to see that sort of awareness of time in the middle of it, he probably was more focused on the clock than on the moment. He really was. That's all he cared about, the clock. He cared about the clock, and then he cared about positioning, his options. But probably uppermost in his mind was the clock, but as he should, by the way. That's his job. But that's a veteran's reaction to it. That's how the veteran approaches a moment like that. Just the clock.
Yeah.
And just the clock. That's the only thing that matters. And he really pursued it. And that was just great to watch.
I think so, too. And that's, that's a lot of – what we heard about Kenny Pickett in the pre-draft process, and then once he was selected by the Steelers, that this guy is a leader. He's cool, calm, and collected in big moments, and I think we're really starting to see that Saturday, obviously, the shining example from this season. What are you hoping to see then from Kenny these last 2 weeks, Alvaro? You got a hostile environment waiting for you, New Year's Day, Sunday in Baltimore. Then you come back home against the Browns in what's always an intense game, intense rivalry in the division there between Cleveland and Pittsburgh. These last 2 weeks for the offense and for Kenny, in your mind, where would you like to see continued growth? Where would you maybe like to see them continue to polish up this product as we come to the end of the season here?
Well, as you mentioned, that he's up against two defenses that are extremely good and know the Steelers well and know exactly where the Steelers are weak. So he's up against two formidable defenses. I think at this point, you just want to watch him throw touchdowns. That's really the only thing that's left here. Whether it's the 3 or 4 yard variety or the 15, 20 yard variety, I don't really care. Even if you throw in a bomb, I'll take that. But what I really want to see is Kenny beginning to feel confident that he can throw the ball downfield for a score and know that it won't get picked. And that's why the pass to George was so important. That was a tight window. In a way, he had to think, gee, I have to throw this. I have no choice here. In a way, that helped him. But that was a tight window, and it took someone that's been really – put under a lot of pressure not to give up the ball as they should, on him as a rookie, it took a lot of guts to throw that pass. And I, if we can do that, if he can do that once a game, twice a game, once per half, even if the rest of the offensive performance isn't that great, if he can start building on just throwing touchdown passes, we're there. We're there. I mean, this team is going to take a whole different tenor. Understand that Pittsburgh made a tremendous decision. And here's a question for you all. Someone deserves an award here. It may have been an obvious decision to turn to a running game after the bye week. And I know that Mike Tomlin made that final decision. I would love to find out how they came to that decision. You know, who pushed for it? Who saw that? Maybe pushed for it earlier. No one thought that that offensive line was up for it. I don't think so. I don't remember hearing that. I do remember people saying, yeah, they're better at run blocking than pass blocking. But I didn't hear anybody say, no, that line was born the run block. Someone made that call. And so to answer to your question, after going off the beaten path for a second here, when that team is so run-oriented, and it still is for obvious reasons, now if Kenny, in the limited opportunity he has to throw, can start throwing touchdowns, then things change. Things change down the road, meaning next year in the future. But things change for this offense. And if you're a defense facing the Steelers now, and the kid can throw a touchdown pass, and they can run the way they can, oh, it's a load you don't want to watch, you don't want to face on a given week. You just don't want that team. You don't want any part of that team. So I think that's the next chapter. Just throw touchdown passes.
Well, I think you're onto something. Look, we know that explosive plays have been one of the Achilles heels of this offense throughout the season. The lack of explosivity in the big chunkage plays, that's a problem. Because as you know, and as everybody's talked about, when you constantly are trying to get on 14, 15, 16 play drives, things tend to go wrong at times. You know, I mean, you got somebody that's napping pre-snap and they jump off sides or line up off sides or something that happens to derail that drive. And one of the ways that you can overcome that is with chunk plays that kind of take you out of that grinding mode and all of a sudden makes you lethal. And one of the things that Kenny's got to do and will do, I'm sure, I have no doubts about it, is that he will start to cook up a lot of good explosive plays in the future. Part of that's going to be in that relationship with a guy like George Pickens. Who's capable of delivering the biggest explosive plays? It's Pickens. I mean, that's the guy that, you know, I don't know, you know, you watch him on the back shoulder throw, that he looks like he invented the back shoulder throw. You know what I mean? You know, I mean, you watch that and I go, man, he looks so comfortable doing it. It's not like he's out there and he's battling and you know, swinging his arms and this and that. It's just so comfortable. He looks like he invented the whole thing. And I expect to see more, but the running game has come on. It's like you said, I expected this offensive line to get it sooner or later. I knew it. You go each guy down the line, I can point out how they've grown and so forth. And the culmination of that is a better run game. But they've got to consistently be able to apply that sort of grinding attack so that you can have also the opportunity to go over the top. And one of the things I think we need to do, that the Steelers need to do offensively, is taking those 3 to 5 big shots down the field for you know, each and every game.
Which is, by the way, what Baltimore did in Week 14. I mean, they were overwhelmingly running on first down, but they had a couple of pops on first down. One of them went for 23 yards. So, and you know, I mean, that surprises you. The Steelers actually, if you take away, obviously, the 44-yard Dobbins run that really was a killer at the end of the first half.
And by the way, that's Alvaro, that's something that Najee can do. He's capable of that. And, you know, you got to have your receivers out there blocking downfield too, because that's also how it's done. But I'm sorry, continue.
No, but I'm saying you take that away, and the Steelers actually kept them within 4 yards per carry on first down. On first down, I should add. But the passes were devastating. You're just so focused. This ball was going to run, and that's all you're looking for. And all of a sudden, they pop a little pass, and it's a 10-yarder. It's a 23-yarder. It's a 7-yarder. And you don't expect that. To me, that's, you know, Pittsburgh is past that, I think. They're a little bit more balanced. I do believe that both in the case of Mitch Trubisky and Kenny Pickett, the aversion to turning the ball over has been so much, so ingrained that I do believe, I just look at the design of the play, Craig and Wes, a lot of shots to the bait, to the sideline, where it's station to station. Mm-hmm. Get it here, catch the ball. Don't worry about the yards after catch. Just catch the ball. We'll get 5 yards. We get another down. But at least we don't turn the ball over. I think the Miami game spooked them when Kenny threw those picks. Really, not all of them were his fault, but
right.
And he had to get a touchdown. But I think that spooked them, so they probably doubled down on that sort of play. That's why when I hear criticism of Matt Canada, I don't know enough to know if it's appropriate or not. You see the results. People forget, by the way, when they look at Pittsburgh, that the whole league, scoring in the whole league has been depressed. There's not a team scoring 30 points in the NFL. Everybody's down. If you score 24 points, you're in the top 10. People forget that. So I just think that it's tough to evaluate that when you've got the situation you've had at quarterback, and I think you've had this aversion to turnovers. And by the way, one more thing. You had T.J. Watt out for that big, long stretch of the season. So the defense wasn't going to be that guarantee that you could survive a turnover. And so we'll never know that, but I think we're beginning to get to the point where – there's enough confidence now that they're willing to try to throw those passes that perhaps earlier in the season they would have said, no, not even. You're crazy? No way. And by the way, that Pickens catch was not a typical Pickens catch. That was a fairly standard Pickens catch because the throw was so good. He just had to get to the spot behind the defender and a little bit ahead of him because the ball was right there.
Yep.
And that's why that was such a great throw by Kenny Pickett. That was one of the best throws all year he's thrown and happened to be at a clutch time. So that's what I think we need to start looking at more and more and more. The other thing that's interesting here is Mitch Trubisky comes in and connects with Deontay Johnson, who's the best route runner on the team and one of the best in the league. Okay, talk about – how can that guy be underrated? You know what? He is underrated because he hasn't scored. If you don't score in the NFL, you're nobody. You look at all the numbers, but the key one is how many touchdowns have you scored. That really sets you apart. So because he's got the big fat zero so far, people have forgotten about him. But Mitch almost woke Kenny Pickett up. Like, dude, this is your best route runner. Now, you've got George who can catch anything in the vicinity, and that's an asset. But day-to-day, play-to-play, Deontay is a dude.
He's open all the time.
Get him the ball. And it's almost like that 10 for 10, 10 targets and 10 catches with Trubisky kind of woke everybody up. It certainly woke Kenny up. And Kenny's been talking about how Mitch has been helping him in practice.
Right.
Pulling him over and saying, this is how Deontay runs. This is how you best make use of that asset. And so you're beginning to see that. You know, Kenny comes back and you're beginning to see that connection flourish, which may have not been there before, partly because, of course, Kenny didn't practice with the ones in Latrobe and all that jazz. But I think Mitch Trubisky may have woken everybody up, particularly Kenny Pickett. Hey, listen, Deontay's there. Throw him the ball.
There's no doubt. I mean, look at it. In 10 games in which Kenny has played at least a full half, Deontay has 45 receptions for 435 yards. But in the five games that Trubisky has played more than a half, DJ has 37 for 374. I mean, that's more production in, you know, catches and yards per game with Mitch than it is with Kenny. But Kenny is also, you know, getting the throws there too. But here's the thing about it. The more explosive plays are going to come when you get Pickens being able to run conceptually all the routes and adjustments as he moves on in his experience level of getting all the things done. Plus, the Freiermuth connection, you can't deny it. I mean, you think about that again, that last drive, three of the passes went to Pat, you know, and I think he's just a money guy. You go back to the Tampa game, that fourth down when they needed They needed, what, 6-7 yards, and Kenny held the ball. He held the ball. He got Pickens to one side. You got Deontay to another. They're both open, but he waits for Freiermuth to hit that middle in the zone coverage out there. I'm sorry, it was man. And in the man coverage, he's running across the middle, and there's a narrow window, and Kenny holds the ball and then drops it in there for a 20-plus yard gainer. That, to me, said everything about this guy's courage, his ability to lead, and his desire to win, not just complete a pass.
And could he have done that in the game against Miami earlier in the season? Maybe. Maybe not. You get the feeling that he's getting the timing right.
Yes.
Like, when does he have to, you know, literally move his – torque his body and move his arm so the ball gets there? Because if he's just a tick late – you may still get a catch, but it'll be complicated.
Right. It won't hit the guy. You got to throw the guy
over. The guy in stride.
Yeah.
And the defender has a chance to get a little closer, get a little bit in the way, which makes you maybe want to throw the ball above the guy and say the heck with it. Now, we're talking offense, and we should, because I think that's what people focus on. But what we witnessed on Saturday night was a defensive recital. I mean, did you hear Josh Jacobs after the game ripping the scheme, ripping the offensive coordinator? You know what, Josh? The Pittsburgh Steelers happened to you.
Yeah.
Cam Hayward happened to you. I mean, the whole defensive line happened to you. Don't blame the offensive coordinator. Don't blame the offensive line. Blame the Pittsburgh Steelers defense, because they earned it, by the way. They played unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, Davante Adams didn't touch the ball in the second half.
Yep.
Didn't touch the ball.
Josh Jacobs was held in check,
Yeah, after the game, you want to bring a Wilson ball and say, hey, Davante, listen, just so you don't forget, this is what it looks like.
Well, Alvaro, you know, staying with that, I wanted to make sure to ask you, too, about the performance of Cam Hayward on Saturday, for him to be the one to carry that 32 flag out of the locker room, and then to go out there and be the best player on the field for 60 minutes, AFC Defensive Player of the Week. I thought that was just, listen, we in Pittsburgh, we know how great Cam is and how much he means to this team, but for him to display that to a national audience on Christmas Eve in an emotional environment like that, I thought was just awesome to see from the captain.
Very true, and when you add that Alex Bars was facing him with a knee injury, then you knew that Cam saw him as appetizer.
Yep.
You know, that's just my appetizer. I'm going to go for the main course. I'm going to get for the sacks and tackles, you know, for loss. But the spirit with which he played, the energy that never flagged, the standard that he set, what he required everybody around him to do. When you see the old guy at 33 move the way he did and just wreak havoc, if you're younger, it's almost like, oh, I got to keep up with my older brother here. I'm not going to get fed at dinner time. If, you know, he'll be fed first. He'll eat everything. I got to keep up with here. And to me, that's what happened there. He led by example. And it was, everybody fed off that energy. It was incredible. I mean, the second half he had, given his position, given the beating that he takes, and given his age, was really exemplary. I mean, the guy never flagged. He just continued, and he was rewarded with that last offensive drive, the score and the win. Even if he hadn't done that, that was a great defensive performance. Take away that first drive, which I think was a bit of an adjustment. But clearly after that, they literally shut them down. They couldn't do a thing. I mean, you remember how Cleveland would fire their head coach after a convincing Pittsburgh win? Look what happened in Las Vegas since Pittsburgh beat them on Saturday night. And by the way, I should add something about Las Vegas. You know, Al Davis and the Rooneys have not always coincided.
Right.
There's a lot of respect.
Right.
But particularly on business issues, they may have not always seen things the same way. And, of course, they have that game as a potential sort of dividing element between the franchises. But that didn't stop the Las Vegas Raiders from acknowledging Franco's passing and wishing everybody well.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't stop Phil Villapiano, who to this day calls it the Immaculate Deception, as opposed to reception, from showing up and being there and sharing the moment with Steelers fans, and we need to acknowledge that, that this is one of the toughest, you know, conference rivals with a history. They don't like us. Pittsburgh doesn't like them. They respect each other, but they don't like each other.
Right.
And in the moment of pain, they show up and do the right thing. So I think that has to be acknowledged. I thought that was one of the highlights of the weekend, really, of a very tough weekend, is how the Raiders comported themselves as a franchise and as an institution. So tip of the cap to them.
Yes, and exactly so. But I also say, and in 50 years in the making, they got kicked back to Vegas. I can only say that because I've been there and I've hated on them as they've hated on me. And we were there with fisticuffs and headbutts. And I know that from a personal vantage point how bitter it was. When I came in 1980, there was a bitterness still from, you know, 1972. And every time the Steelers and Raiders played, it was a fist fight in the blood sport of the trenches. You know,
I'm trying to put some sugar on that pill, and you just basically, he kept it real.
I couldn't help it, Alvaro. I had to set this record straight.
He started to see red there, Alvaro. You know, that blood got boiling.
You know, it's so funny. I mean, because it is. I mean, I just saw Joe Green a few days ago, you know, and, you know, you talk about the Raiders, and he'd just shake his head, you know. I go back to 1980, my rookie year, when we lost to the Raiders 45-34 at Three Rivers Stadium on Monday Night Football. And Joe hates three things. He hates losing. He hates losing on Monday Night Football, and he hates the Raiders. And he hates losing on Monday Night Football to the Raiders, maybe most of all. And Joe just went off in the locker room afterwards, and I just remember that moment. And it just carries over. You know, we could go on and on about how the Raiders and the Steelers, the rivalry and the things that have happened over the years, but it really, in essence, yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to blow up the nice picture you were painting there.
It's okay. I tried.
Well, we were all trying. Everybody was trying to be hospitable until it was all done, you know, and then it was like, okay, it's the Raiders and the Steelers.
Gloves
and
still,
yeah, it's just like it was.
But, you know, it goes to show in a season where I think making the playoffs is going to be very, very hard, if not impossible. By the time Sunday night and the game against Baltimore rolls, Pittsburgh may know that they're not in the playoffs.
Right.
Still, I mean, there's always going to be that hope. But you get the feeling that the business of the team right now is improving. It's just obviously winning the rest of the games. But that they're getting this taste of what we spoke earlier, confidence. Oh, we can do that. Oh,
yes.
We can do that. Oh, we're able to do that. Well, let's do it again. Let's make a habit of some of these things, some of these sort of mountaintops, so that we can just see what's next above us and what's ahead of us. And to me, that's the focus of this season after the start the Steelers had. And they've responded. And to see first-year players, second-year players respond the way they did in that drive on offense was really very special. It really was. And then, of course, if you think about the setting and the conditions and the opponent, even more so.
Absolutely. Alvaro, thank you so much for joining us. Your call was great. The conversation was just as great. We enjoy you, brother. What a great job you're doing. And thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week. Well, we'll see you in Baltimore.
That's right. Thank you, Wes. And
thanks,
Greg,
Alvaro.
I'm going to put my shirt on, and I'm going to get ready for the New Year.
It'll be a little warmer in Baltimore this weekend, I think. So. Thanks, Alvaro.
Thank you so much, Alvaro. All right, of course, that's thanks. Great. Alvaro Martin and putting his shirt on, thankfully. As we get ready to grow, we got, coming up, we got more in the locker room here. I'm trying to think. We got to talk more about finishing, Wes. The importance of finishing, because you got to finish those drives. It's going to be big when they go to Baltimore, because the Steelers need to get those red zone things, get everything figured out, and stick it in the end zone. We'll be back with more in the end in the locker room. I was going to say in the end zone. Going, are you kidding me? In the locker room, SNR.
The
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Pick an empty set, first and 15. He throws the pass down the middle. What a catch! And that is Connor Hayward reeling that pass in for a 17-yard touchdown, the first of his career.
The beauty of that, the Meatball Express, as we called it that day, became Saturday night when Connor sealed the game with that 21-yard jet sweep carry. You know, we thusly named it the Polar Express.
Because love that.
I like that, too. It just, on Christmas Eve, it was just so, it just all comes together. And Connor Hayward is an interesting guy. You know, he's very unique in his attributes that he brings, his skill set that he brings to the Steelers. You know, when he first came aboard, I was like, how is this guy going to fit in? Where is he going to fit in? You know, and one of the things that, okay, maybe fullback. Well, what are they going to do with Derek? Well, it wasn't so much the fullback. It's this H-back, which is really, it's like a fullback lined up as a tight end or a tight end lined
right.
up as
a little
fullback.
Bit of both.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the fact of the matter was, Connor has this unique skill set that is every bit as unique as we're going to play the Ravens. I think the most unique guy I've seen in the fullback position all in several years is Patrick Ricard,
yeah.
The 300-pounder from the Ravens. The guy's capable of lining up at nose tackle, for crying out loud, which he has done in the past, but H-back, fullback, inline tight end, and he does the job anyway. But Connor just has this knack of getting open. He's got an ability to make the catch and run the ball. And I thought one of the things that really stood out to me was the very fact that Matt Canada called that play. Number one, you know, people say, well, it's a jet sweep. Connor never run it. He'd never run it,
right.
You know, in his career. And yet he'd worked on it, you know, in practice and so forth. And Matt Canada had enough confidence in Connor Hayward to put the ball in his hands at the very finish when you're trying to, you know, just get that first down and then kneel it out and go to victory formation. And he puts the ball in Connor's hands and Connor delivers yet again. I got to tell you, this young man is very interesting.
He certainly is, and he's got a skill set that's unique. You can use him in some different ways. We've seen that, you know, whether it's the jet sweep, whether it's in the short pass game, whether it's like that highlight that we just played there, a 17-yard touchdown pass, you know, that capped off a nice 75-yard scoring drive for the Steelers in the red zone down in Atlanta. He's, you know, he's that Swiss Army knife type that I think man, it's really nice to have those type of guys that you can use in different ways on your offense. And, you know, you mentioned Ricard from Baltimore. You know, that's something the Ravens have done well, Wolf.
Yes.
All, you know, they before Patrick Ricard, they had, you remember, I'm sure, Kyle Juszczyk as well,
yes.
too, who's now with the Niners. You know, he was kind of that same way. Like, he has a handful of rushing touchdowns in his career, a handful of receiving touchdowns in his career, and you never really know how they're going to deploy him. And he's got the talent to play, you know, wear those multiple hats, play those different roles. And I'm very optimistic that Connor Hayward is growing into and can grow into one of those type of guys.
One of the things that makes Patrick Ricard so unique is you don't see 300-pound H-backs.
Right.
You know? I mean, watch this guy. He can line up at the point of attack, and they will use him. What's so interesting is they'll use him as an H-back, as a lead guy, in an ISO. They'll offset the eye and go ISO behind this guy. They'll use him as the trailer on a counter trap. They will use him as the lead man on the counter trap, the kickout man, and on the pin and pull series mm-hmm. stuff that they do. And, you know, I mean, it's the variability is huge. Now, Connor's not the same way physically. He's not a 300-pounder. But he does a good job in blocking. You know, he's not as devastating physically as a Patrick Ricard, but Patrick Ricard can't run the routes that Connor Hayward
right.
can.
Right.
He doesn't have the hands of Connor Hayward. Connor also runs the ball better than Patrick Ricard ever will.
Right.
You know, but what I'm saying is there's a unique set of skills that Connor possesses that you don't think it doesn't jump out at you, and yet we saw glimpses of it way back in training camp. I remember watching him on some of the pass heavy practicing when they go past Skelly and doing some things, mm-hmm. and just watching the young man you know, navigate the coverages, reading the coverages, getting on the sidelines, beating the guy down the sidelines, high pointing the ball, doing wide receiver skill set things, but he's a bigger body. Or his ability to – he's very game and going after somebody and the blocking, you know. So I like what this young man brings, because it's a skill set that, again, is very unique, and I look for more of that. But in finishing, which is what – you know, basically we're talking about here. Finishing drives are going to be key for the Steelers this week. They came out of the bye, and they've been getting better at it. They're 17th currently in converting red zone drives at just over 53%. Hmm. They've just got to be better about it. But, again, you go back to that first Ravens encounter, even with the 215 yards rushing, the Steelers were only a blocked field goal from winning that game.
Yeah, maybe a blocked field goal, just you know, some better execution in the red zone. And that, I think, is the encouraging part of this offense, Wolf, is, yes, again, we can point to things that still aren't where we want them to be. You know,
right.
They scored 13 points. I think the Raiders game is a perfect example of that, too. You know, they scored 13 points in that game. You want more. You want more consistent drives there. And they had some missed field goal opportunities.
Right.
But, you know, you see that and you say, okay, hey, 13 points in the National Football League in 2022, pretty soon going to be 2023 here when the Steelers play their next game.
Oh, my goodness.
You're going to need to score more than 13 points consistently to win like you want to in the NFL. But the good from that is, right, it wasn't going your way, wasn't going your way, wasn't going your way the whole night. Bad weather. Every reason to just think, hey, it's not our night. But you're able to pull it out and have your best drive of the game at the end and score that touchdown to win victory. That's part of the growth process. But can you finish more of these now too, right? Can you not only move the ball like we've seen, but can you find the end zone more consistently? Can you, you know, score 20, 21, 23, 24 points instead of 13 or 17? I think that's, you know, part of the mantra for this offense as well too, as we hope to see that improvement continue over these last 2 weeks.
No question about it. And it's going to be about finishing the drives.
Yep.
And that means, you know, the thing about it is you've got to make sure going into the red zone, you know, that the real estate gets shrinkage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that the windows are smaller. You know that you can't play over the top too much, you know, because that's the nature of the beast when you get to the red zone and the low red zone in that area. But it's a mindset that begins in practice and finishes at the end of a game. You know, that's when you've got to have that mindset of being able to finish your drives as you finish the game. Learning to put the boots to an opponent. When you have them down, when you have them in a vulnerable position, when you feel their grip is on the game is weakening and you're strengthening, you can't miss that. You've got to be able to sense that and go after it. One of the things that was always so wonderful in my experience as a player was when you were physically putting the boots to an opposition,
mm-hmm,
and able to keep grinding in an attack, and they were unable to stop you, and you knew it. You could feel it. You could see it in their actions, the way they got up slow off the turf. You could see it in the huddle with the way guys were standing,
yep,
with a discouraged
dejected
look.
Dejected, yeah.
Yes, you heard it in your arguments when they were arguing back and forth, like Jimmy Haslett and Freddie Smirles from the Bills one time.
I can tell you enjoyed this. I mean,
when I go back to, it's such a funny story, and we don't have time to go through it all now, but just the fact that Webby squeezing the ball on Freddie Smirles, who was just a terrific nose tackle, but he was as twitchy as a sneeze, man, and a powerful dude. And Haslett warning him. Then they're arguing in their own huddle, practically coming to blows in their own.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was great. So
you guys, you guys are smiling like we did that. Yeah, we did that.
I was
baby.
Just laughing because Webby turned to me and he goes, "Watch, I'm going to get him again," and he did. He did. It was so funny.
Oh, I love it. That's great.
Oh, well, we better go to break, huh? We got to get one more.
Before.
Okay, let's go to break. We'll be back and wrap it up right here in the locker room, SNR.
This is In the Locker Room with Wolf and Starks on ESPN Pittsburgh and Steelers Nation Radio, presented by your neighborhood Ford store. The F-150 is the official truck of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
And he gets the playoff just in the nick of time. He's hit, and he's sacked back near the 35-yard line by the captain, Cameron Hayward. He's back. Big rush. He sacked back inside the 35-yard line by Captain Cam. How about that one?
Oh, I love them apples. That's Billy Hillgrove just setting it straight. Love it. You got Captain Cam doing what Captain Cam does. And that's saccharations. But I got to tell you again, Weston, I was talking about it with Alvaro, as we both were, but that first pass rush on or sack off of Dylan Parham when he threw Dylan Parham at Derek Carr, I was just like going, you got to be kidding me. I've never seen a guy get thrown at the quarterback like Cam threw Dylan Parham at Derek Carr.
Poor Dylan Parham, I tell you what.
Yeah, you don't want to be him.
Welcome to the league. But that's, you know, that's what we – listen, that's what we've grown to expect from Cam Hayward. I mean, he does that. It doesn't matter if you're a younger guy in the league trying to cut your teeth and make it. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, Quentin Nelson a couple years ago, arguably the best guard in football, and Cam, you know, was just able to really dominate him over the course of 60 minutes.
Yes.
That's why, you know, we speak so highly of him here in Pittsburgh. We all know. Listen, it's easy in this era. I mean, Cam has played at the same time as Aaron Donald and J.J. Watt, two of the best defensive linemen ever. Two guys that have won six NFL Defensive Player of the Year awards between them. I mean, it's insane. But you can't forget about Cam Hayward, man. He's fine wine. He means so much not only on the field, but off the field and in the community. That's why he's obviously the Walter Payton Man of the Year nominee for the Steelers.
Right.
And I just loved Wolf him having that performance in primetime in a game that everybody's watching because, again, he deserves his credit. He deserves his flowers. He deserves his recognition. And I think everybody was on notice and saw that on Saturday night.
Unquestionably so. You know, watching Cam just conduct himself over the past week, at, you know, with Franco and everything else too, his leadership skills, what he means to this team and to the city of Pittsburgh is so ginormous. You know, getting snubbed at the Pro Bowl, then you come back and you have a 7-tackle, 3-tackle for loss, 2-sack, and 1 pass defense performance that makes you the AFC Defensive Player of the Week from your game against the Raiders, and you think this is the third time Cam has won that award. This is the third Steelers player to be picked this year, with Minka and Alex Highsmith also receiving the accolades. Well played.
Yeah.
You know, I have so much respect for Cam, and as I said to the great Joe Green the other day, and we were talking about it, I said, you know, I think Cam's the closest this city is ever going to see to you again.
I completely agree.
And Joe smiled. You know what I mean?
He personifies everything it means to be a Steeler.
He really does. And I think the world of Cam. And, you know, I know that his dad would be so proud of him.
Absolutely.
So, anyhow, thank you for joining us today. Wes, thank you for sitting in for Max.
Well,
Max, do you know, is Max going to be available tomorrow?
Max is back tomorrow.
Okay.
And then I think we'll miss him on Monday again.
Okay.
I think it might just be me and you on like 90 minutes of sleep. But we'll get her done.
We'll get her done. That's the way we go about the business. We always get it done.
No
somehow,
days off,
some way.
Wolf.
That's right,
until,
baby.
Until the season's over. Then
yes.
We take plenty of days off.
Then my wife is like counting the days until I leave again, you know, until back in season. Exactly so. But thank you so much for sitting in, Wesley, as usual. Great job, my friend. Thank you to everybody who joined us here in the locker room. We appreciate you. We'll be back with more tomorrow. Remember, it's getting down to game time already. I mean, can you believe it? We're already close to going back to Baltimore. So we'll start breaking down a little bit of a little scouting report tomorrow, and hope you'll join us then. Thank you so much. And as my dad used to say, at the end of the day, you know, sitting there at the dining table, and he'd say, hey, muttonhead, pass the ketchup. Thanks, Dad. All right. Thank you, folks, for joining us. We'll be back tomorrow.